Welcome to week 21 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm Mike, and the only feeling worse than losing a counter war is holding four counters and not being able to respond.
That happens. And I'm your co-host, Andy Flory, and at Command Fest Chicago this weekend, I learned that when you sit down at a casual pod, it's totally cool, I guess, to bring out Mono Blue Teferi Chain Veil.
Oh my gosh.
Is that casual to you?
You know, it's casual to like just like win on turn five.
Just show it off.
Yeah, you know, show off your chainmail Teferi.
We did pretty good fending it off, but I didn't think that was very casual.
It was not.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering. We switched it up on you guys this week. He started and I didn't start.
That's right.
They heard it, I bet.
You are flipped, turned, and upside down right now.
You got, what's that song? It's from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. There's like a line about that. Was that the actual line?
That's the line. Flip, turn, upside down.
And I'd like to take a minute.
Just sit right there.
And talk about Magic.
The Gathering.
In something Bel-Air. What is on the agenda this week?
So on the agenda this week, Andy and I went to Command Fest Chicago this last weekend.
True story.
I know we did a lot of previews for that last week, but we're going to talk about some of our lessons learned and the stuff that happened over the last weekend. And then we also are going to talk about the social aspect of the game of Commander.
And what we learned about it based on this past weekend. Because we play with a small group of people at two different shops and then with our friends. And it was a whole new world when we played with a lot of people that we had never met before.
A whole new world.
I think that's like the fourth time we've done that on this show. I think I just say a whole new world a lot.
Because you just like...
In normal speech.
Right. Just because you really have Aladdin in the back of your head at all points in time.
Best Disney movie.
I don't disagree.
Oh, yes. So Command Fest Chicago was a lot of fun.
It was. We got to play in a lot of different kind of game types that we've never done before.
But I did not play. I did not choose to play in a truly competitive pod, but I ended up in one.
You did. You did end up in one.
It was stressful. I felt stressed the entire time. I was like sweating. And I had a lot more fun playing the casual games.
You know, I had a lot of fun in that first competitive game. So the game that we're referring to is our first game of Two-Headed Giant, where I was playing Demonic Consultation Cast, Tier 1.
So a competitive EDH deck.
Yeah.
I was not playing one of those. I was playing a Mono Blue Control deck, and I was attempting to take all the extra turns with Moloku, the Clouded Mirror, but it was... Well, that didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't. But I did get into a counter war that had seven things on the stack.
Seven things on the stack.
And it was really stressful.
Yeah.
I ended up winning that.
You did.
I used all my resources.
Even mine. Even I had a swan song.
He had to help
too.
Me in the middle of that. But I think every single time a judge walked by our table, they'd look over and they go, ugh, I'm going to walk away. Well, they did not want to be by our table at all.
It was partly because you had a telepathy out and both of our opponent's hands were completely revealed.
Every time someone would walk by, they'd look over at our opponents and go, why is everything face up? And then at one point, one of the judges goes, did you guys sideboard before you started?
Because they had a Graph Digger's Cage and we had a telepathy. It was ridiculous.
If you're playing Mono Blue, throw a telepathy in. It really helps you, even if you're already nervous about playing, because sometimes I get a little stressed out or anxious. I get anxious when people who have played their decks a lot more than I have are either rushing you or they seem really cool, calm, and collected, and I'm sitting there like, I have no idea what's happening. How do I play this game? But when I can see their whole hand, it sometimes doesn't make you feel good when you go, I don't know how to answer seven of those things between the two of their hands.
But, you know, the two guys we played up against, I think they were very calm and
super
fun.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm glad that we went to that event with competitive decks in hand. We were ready to switch them out for something else, and we did that in our second game.
Yes. Which we also lost.
But it was what we sat across from a Shimmerzer and a...
Before we do that, we have a lot of people that don't play a ton of Commander who listen. What is Shimmerzer? Even because spoiler alert, I don't know what that one is either.
So Shimmerzer is I believe it's a Pillow Fort Zer deck that wins.
Well, I know it only had four enchantments because he let us know. And after he lost two of them, he grabbed Necropotence as one of them.
Which Necropotence is the best enchantment in that deck.
So you can exile any number of cards from your library, and at the end of your turn, you pay one life, right, for each one, and then you put them all into your hand.
That is correct.
And you can't draw cards.
Correct. So that gets around some of the things that we were playing, like Narset, Parter of Veils. I play not Notion Thief. I always call it Notion Thief.
No, you do play that, don't you, in there?
Is it Notion Thief? Yeah. I always say Thief of Sanity.
Yep, it's not that, because that's a bad Notion card Thief. In yes. Commander. Notion Thief, it gets around to that as well.
So Shimmer Xur is the...
While you look that up, the other person was playing Najeela combo, so they ended up taking all the extra combats and swinging out infinitely. I just extended the handshake because I knew I had nothing in hand. I saw what they had. Coil had nothing in his hand, and I said, do you have it? And the guy says, yeah, I can untap this way. I said, just show me how to do it once, how you're going to do it, and then we're good to go. So we did end up conceding there. But I think having all the cards on the stack was probably the highlight of that game, for me at least.
It was. I was holding WinCon in hand for like six turns, but they had a card out that said we couldn't search our libraries.
And it was Stranglehold, so you can't search your libraries, but you also can't take extra turns, so I couldn't take an extra
turn. Good sideboard.
Yeah. No, so the stack, I'll explain it while you're finding that. I think this was the most interesting thing that I think had happened, or competitive thing that happened over the weekend. Someone had an Isochron Scepter out and a bunch of 2-mana artifacts. The Isochron Scepter had Dramatic Reversal, so they were going to go infinite in a full hand. And so I went to sacrifice my Karn's Bastion on 2 so it would destroy all of their 2 CMC permanents. Just all the 2 CMC permanents. And he went to activate the Isochron Scepter to get the infinite mana, and I stifled it. Because I play Stifle in Commander. And then he, Narset's Reversaled, my Stifle. And then Coil, Swan Songed, the Narset's Reversal. And then he Flusterstormed the Swan Song, which I think storm count at that point was 8. And then we had to ask some rules because I didn't know if I could respond how I needed to, and I could. So then we Narset's Reversaled the original Stifle back to my hand, and then stifled again on the thing, the Isochron Scepter activation, and then it all resolved down, and our opponent got his Narset's Reversal back in his hand somehow. No, because you played a black card in the middle of that, didn't you?
No, that was actually a previous turn when I used Imp's Mischief.
Oh, yeah. So then it just resolved down and he lost his Narset's Reversal.
Yep.
And it felt really good. We still lost even after that, but it felt pretty good blowing up a bunch of artifacts.
It did.
Okay, so what is Shimmer Xur?
So Shimmer Xur uses Shimmer Mirror so that you can cast your artifacts at instant speed to loop a Sensei's Divining Top for an Aetherflux Reservoir kill.
Oh, and he lost the Reservoir. I remember that, because he goes, this is already in the graveyard, so it doesn't matter at this point.
Right, so at that point, he was just playing Control.
Control.
He could still probably, like, Lab Man out with Isochron Scepter Infinite Mana, like Blue Sun Zenith.
Sure.
So, but, I mean, at that point, he could just play Esper Control and let the Najeela player win.
Yep.
Which is what happened.
Yeah. And it was... Coil really enjoyed that game. I was like, I could have done without that game this weekend.
Yeah, I didn't get the opportunity to play that deck again. I probably could have. I shouldn't say that.
And I believe, and someone can fact check me if I'm wrong here for sure, but I'm pretty sure that when Pastime Games tweeted, they had the most engagement for Two-Headed Giant over the weekend. There were over 300 people who played Two-Headed Giant at Command Fest Chicago. So there was a ton of that going on. And there were multiple of those a day. I think there were 2 Two-Headed Giant events each day.
Yeah.
Friday, Saturday, and on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And this podcast is going to be a lot about our gameplay as well from those games. Mm-hmm. So if you're not following, feel free to reach out to us directly if there's any questions about what we're talking about here or how we did something. And I know next week we got a suggestion on talking about how to get into Commander when it's a super overwhelming format and what you... like a good way to learn some of the basics, or what cards should you know going into the game. So that's going to be our topic for the episode this week. But this one's probably going to be a little bit of a deep dive and a little heavier on cards that are not as well known.
Right.
There were a lot of non-staples I saw this weekend, which was, I think, the best part about the weekend was that I did not play against 800 Cyclonic Rifts.
No.
I don't think I saw any.
I saw...
not even one?
I saw one, I want to say, but I can't remember which game it was in. But I know with the Two-Headed Giant, I know last week we talked about some rules that we looked up for Two-Headed Giant, such as the team-constructed rule, where you weren't allowed to use copies of the same card in both decks.
But you could play identical decks if you really wanted to.
You really could.
And that's what we found out.
And that's why I'm like, okay, I'm just going to bring out Kess then, just in case something happens.
We'll still lost, though.
And we still lost. So then in game two, we decided to have a little bit more fun, and I played my new Ayara deck.
And you got mana screwed. That was how that went.
I did. It's an aggressive deck, and it happens. And then you played...
Omnath.
Omnath, Cheeto's Hands.
Locus of Rage. But we played against a Ur-Dragon deck and Taisa Orzhov Scion. The Taisa deck did really, really well. It was great. It got so many birds, but it was able to exile both Omnath and Ayara, and so our decks didn't do anything because
correct.
Of that. And that... But that's what that deck is supposed to do. Their combo worked really well. And we lost to regular old cards. There was nothing special that came at us. There was just a big old dragon and a bunch of birds. There was a creature that had power and toughness equal to the number of creatures that he had. And I can't remember what it was. It was white.
The monk?
Yep. That's what it is.
It was a ground. It was a
Geist honored monk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... that was a fun game. So Two-Headed Giant was overall I'd play it again, but I think what I would do is I would definitely play a casual pot of that.
Yeah.
Like a real casual. Like I'd play like a Slimefoot or a Sigarda or something.
Which Slimefoot itself would be very good in Two-Headed Giant.
Actually, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it really would.
So what we told you about the format last week, we think we were correct with Two-Headed Giant. We just got paired with people who were very, very good.
And they
played them well.
They got better cards than I did.
Yeah, I mean, variance in the game, that's a thing. the other format we played, which we won our first game of, was Emperor.
Yes, so, Emperor was a ton of fun.
But we had some rules questions. Okay, well, I think our table probably asked had more judge calls than anyone else.
At all of our tables, not just Emperor. Our Two-Headed Giant game.
I think it's because we did all those on Friday. Oh, no. Emperor was on Saturday.
I had a ton of questions in my Pinata game, too.
Oh, we had none.
Oh. We wanted rule clarifications.
Oh, we did not.
I have a special one I haven't told you about yet.
Oh, okay. But so in Emperor, we played... Koi was the Emperor in the middle. He played She-Ray Mono Black. I played Noyan Dark Control. And then Nick played Azuri Claw of Progress, just Smash Face. And
boy, did he smash face.
Yeah, we did really well. Even with a rule that was incorrect, that was not in our favor, we did win through it. So that we got very lucky there.
It didn't change how we played the game. However, we did have a judge tell us three different life totals that we were supposed to start at.
Okay, so when we started, tell everyone what he said when we started.
So we started, he said, normally this format is played with 20 life, but my personal pod plays it with 30 life, but the rules say we're going to play with 40 life.
So we started with 40. That's fine. 40. That's cool. Even though, and we did learn later, after like, I think a bunch of tables had a bunch of judge calls, it was supposed to be 20. That's fine.
Yep.
We got there. We just did a little bit more work. Mm-hmm. That's fine. But I think it was particularly important because... Coil did have a way to on turn five cast a
Torment of Hailfire for X equals 6.
So you have to either discard a card, sacrifice a non-land permanent, or take 3 life 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you only have 20 life, that's 18 life.
Yeah, you're going to be discarding some cards.
And with an Emperor, he does it to both of the generals on the other side of the board. Well, neither of them at the time had any non-land permanents, no counterspell, no, there was nothing, there was no, they weren't responding.
Mm-hmm.
So because they were at 40 life, they said, well, what's 18? We'll go to 22. So they went to 22. Well, had it been at 20 life, they would have gone down to...
They probably would have...
They would have probably discarded 6.
Take 6. I would say they probably would have taken 6, discard 3. Something like that.
Wouldn't that be 9? They would have taken 9. Isn't it 3 life reach?
They would have taken 9.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Man, that card's so good.
So I think it ended up that worked against us only in that case.
It did.
But Nick did end up getting, I guess, 22 damage through in the end.
Yeah, he just kept drawing gas after gas after gas. I mean,
and I didn't.
At one point, it was like, okay, we think we can win in the next few turns, and then Nick top decks overrun. It's like, okay, next turn we win, I guess.
This is where my intro matters. So we sit down, and I think before we'll preface this with competitiveness. So we want to talk about the competitiveness of this past weekend as well.
So there's
before we skip too far ahead.
Sure.
And Coyle ends up having a Grim Monolith in his deck.
Yes.
Doesn't play it that early, but he does play it.
I do. It is a net positive 1-mana artifact. It costs a crap ton of money, but that's in its essence, that's what it is. Net positive 1-mana, like a Sol Ring.
Sure. Because you have to pay 4 to untap it.
Well, yeah, in that case, it would be quote unquote worse than a Sol Ring.
Sure.
Costs 2, taps for 3.
Correct. So he plays that, and opponent, they questioned the competitiveness of the deck. They said, I don't think you should be in this competitive or this casual competitive tier. You should be in competitive because you're playing a Grim Monolith.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Command Zone released an awesome podcast yesterday on the competitiveness of your deck, ways to figure out your competitive level. Subjective, obviously,
sure.
for everyone, but in playing it on turn 5 and not really having a follow-up, he didn't do anything with it that turn. You literally played it and passed because you didn't tap it, right?
I tapped it.
What'd you use it for? Was that the turn that you did the Torment of Veilfire?
No, that was the turn that I pumped out Shire and Mindless Automaton.
Okay. So you used it just to play your commander and another creature.
And
though.
One creature.
It wasn't like some combo.
Correct.
Regardless. They questioned whether or not we should have been sitting at that table. And I understand, I guess, to an extent, if that is not available in your card pool. There's been a lot of discussion about that on Twitter today. You can actually check out my profile for that. Mm-hmm. I did tweet about that. I had Dana Roach responded from EDH Retcast. There's a couple other people that were talking about it as well. I can see it from both sides.
For sure.
Whether you have access to those funds or not, mm-hmm. or play with people that use those cards. But I think the thing that was interesting about that was that the person I was sitting across from was playing mono blue Teferi Chain Veil combo, infinite combo.
Yeah, that's a fringe tier 1 deck.
And we said absolutely, completely understand. You know, this is a very expensive card. You know, the deck that you guys have right over here at this general is also mm-hmm. an infinite combo deck.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, all right, yeah. I mean, we understand.
Right.
I mean, they understood. You had an expensive card. They had a deck that was probably playing above its tier there.
Yeah, $50 worth of cards that wins you the game.
Right. I mean, they were probably playing above that tier as well. I think I did get lucky with the ability to wheel away a High Tide that we knew we had in hand. He drew into the Chain Veil and a bunch of rocks, and then I was able to Planar Cleansing and destroy them the next turn, and he did not have a follow-up. So I did get very lucky there.
Yes.
I don't think we would have won had I not been able to wheel and then destroy
We lost next turn.
So we got very lucky, though. Had a good game at the end. I think... Oh, and then the other rules question was, we were told by... one judge at the beginning that you can the emperor can absolutely attack the generals across the board,
mm-hmm.
and I called for a judge, and the other judge said, yeah, no, you can't. You can only attack one person to your left. And they said, well, how does that work if there's a general here? And they said, your general has to die before you can attack the other team.
Yep.
And so I think that would have changed a lot of things for them as well, because they played Gishath as the commander.
As the emperor.
So it was wanting to swing.
Right. I think that was a big mistake for them.
But I think they didn't realize that, because we did ask in the beginning and they said that you could.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Otherwise, I think they would have played something else, which I completely would have said, go ahead, change your deck.
Yeah,
like, you're good to go.
Absolutely.
Overall, though, that game was fun. We played Emperor another day where I was the commander playing a 5-color Jota deck and hoping to just, like, get a couple of Planeswalkers out and maybe... defend, and it just didn't work out. We played against Prosh and Korvold.
Dude, Korvold's so strong.
Korvold is really good as a commander. I had never. That was the first Korvold deck I've ever seen.
Same.
It was really good.
I mean, you could play him Jund Lands Matter. You can play him Jund Aristocrats.
I'd rather play that than Lord Windgrace. I don't enjoy playing Lord Windgrace, but I'd rather play Korvold.
I think it might
and I think
be
I can just actually switch the commander and put Lord Windgrace in the deck, right? I think it just works.
It will work.
That's what I'm going
to
do.
It'll be a little weird, but it'll work.
I mean, I don't know how many cards you have to change for it, but I think I'm going to do that. I'd rather play that and draw cards.
Dude, you get to draw cards.
I get to draw cards. It's best thing.
It's like almost, a, like Gitrog. In like the way he was playing it was very similar to Gitrog. He was sacking his lands. Like he played Lotus Field, sack two lands, draw two cards, pump Korvold two times.
I did fog as Jota though, and that felt good once. And then Teferi, Architect of Thought, giving all of their creatures minus one when they attack felt pretty good against the Prosh player because they had to pump Prosh because none of the other creatures were going to swing for anything.
Now that game we played with 20 life.
That one we did play with 20 life, yeah. And we did have two aggro decks as our generals, and they just didn't go off, and it's fine.
Well, and I lost to Koth Avenger combo. That hurt.
Koth? No, Purphoros Avenger.
Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Purphoros. He's red. They're the same.
Yeah.
One's Planeswalker. One's a god.
Yeah, Purphoros was played. The next turn someone played, they played Avenger of Zendikar, and I said, oh, well, that's all your life. I'm a goner. And I died the next turn.
Me equals dead.
Yes. And then Pinata format. We were so in Emperor, we were right, I think, with our play there as well.
Yeah.
Having an Emperor that would affect both of the generals, which is what you did.
Yep.
Worked out.
It did. It worked well.
And then Pinata.
We were wrong.
Super wrong. It turns out if you just play a combo deck, you win.
You will. I mean, if you play to win the game, you win the game. However, if you have alternate win con, you don't actually win the game. But if you combo ping, like maybe, I don't know, Niv-Mizzet.
Yeah, that was my pod.
Mm. It must have been nice.
Well, to be fair, it was like turn six.
Oh.
It was fast. I mean, for that one, I did play casual in. I said, I want to go to a casual pod.
And you lost turn six in a casual pod.
Yes.
Okay.
I lost
turn six in my casual competitive pod.
I think, meander on over to that Command Zone podcast and take a look. And I think a lot of people were afraid that they would, if they went to the casual competitive, they'd be more on the casual side than competitive. So they said, well, I'll just go to the casual side and be a little bit more competitive on the casual side. And it might have just been that they weren't really casual.
Right.
And that's fine. Yeah, I mean, I get it. Live and learn. First one.
You do, whether you know it or not, you undervalue your own deck. You do.
Everyone? Or are you saying me?
You, the viewers. Every single person. Every single person. You say, you know, my deck's pretty good, but it's not great. No, it's at least a little bit better than you think.
Yeah.
So you just have to look at your deck realistically. Again, watch that video of the Command Zone. They go over it in
really
detail.
Well, in depth.
Yeah. They do a really good job.
They're ones and twos and threes and fours, like the jank and then just above jank.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we were seeing at those casual pods. We were seeing fours, fives, and sixes, I think.
Yeah.
And some sevens, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I played, other than in our free pods or our on-demand pods, I don't actually think I played in a casual. I kept playing in competitive casual.
I think I did everything casual if I could, because I brought along a lot of casual decks with me. And I think I played Zagarda, Heron's Grace,
five
times this past weekend. I love that humans deck.
That deck went off multiple times.
Angel of Glory's Rise. Return all humans you control from the graveyard to the battlefield and exile all zombies. I think I cast that four times this weekend. And I actually had someone, no idea who they were. They walked up and they go, are all those humans on the battlefield? Because you couldn't tell. It was in shambles. I just had cards everywhere. I said, yeah, these are all out. And the guy was like, nice. Yep. He just walked away. I think that happened a few times, honestly.
Yeah.
A lot of the judges would walk up and look and go, okay. All right. I see what's happening.
Yeah. There was a lot of humans.
But I liked playing that because I don't think people see Cigar to Heron's Grace almost ever.
No. No, they definitely don't.
No one sees that deck.
Nope.
And it's fairly inexpensive if you're looking to build a commander deck. It's just a bunch of humans, and you don't have to play all the rare ones.
No, like, what, the most expensive human in there is, like, Tireless Tracker or something?
No,
like that.
There is, I mean, Ranger Captain of Eos is in there, but there's a couple of tutor ones. There's the Recruiter of the Guards who can tutor for toughness 2 or less.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are a couple of expensive ones, but they're not needed.
No, and then everything else in there, it's just everything pumps itself. And
most things are, like, $2 or less in that deck.
Yeah.
But lots of anthem effects. So you can just, if you have 4 or 5 anthem effects, all your 1/1 humans are 5/5s.
And they keep reprinting them too. I mean, Throne of Eldraine even has, they have human pumping and they have non-human pumping. That seemed to
Yeah, not even reprinting, themes. New cards.
Right, just brand new cards, which is perfect for Commander. Thank you, Wizards of the Coast.
Throne of Eldraine had Castle Ardenvale.
Yeah, you can make humans.
Colorless, white, make a human. I didn't realize that was a card. I mean, I realized, but I didn't think about it before Command Fest. And after I got home, we were at Commander on Monday night, and one of the folks up there goes, "Are you running this?" I own one. It's at home. It's not in the deck. I'm going to go get that later.
No, it's in the deck.
And I also got a Mirror Entity because I would have won a few games had I been able to pump out my creatures. So,
mm-hmm. But yeah, Pinata.
Pinata.
That's where we were.
That is. We digress.
Yes, a little bit. I know in my first pod, I decided to play my mono green Galta deck, and some fun interactions happened in there. So the first one, which is one I haven't told you about, one of the guys in our pod was playing, one of the new C19, Rakdos commanders.
Greven.
He's got Menace.
G-Man.
And, I had two creatures, but I didn't want to block with both. But one of the other people in my pod, they had one creature, and I said, if you can block him with one of your creatures and I can block him with one of my creatures, I wonder if that works with Menace. And we call the judge over, and he's like, this is very interesting. Yes, it does work that way.
Because you can assign, because that this in Pinata, you have to assign blockers in turn order.
Yep.
And that doesn't matter in any other game.
That's right. So so she assigned her Caustic Caterpillar, which was great because I had some enchantments I wanted to get out.
Okay.
and I blocked with like one of my mana dorks, like a Llanowar Elves or something.
Uh-huh.
And we double blocked so that he couldn't get any damage in on the Pinata. And it was really cool.
That's a fun rules interaction.
Mm-hmm. She also played a Royal Assassin, not Royal Assassin. It's a, when it enters the battlefield, she was playing Marin. So it's a reanimator deck. And it is a Royal, I don't remember the card. It's black. And when it enters the battlefield, you become the Monarch.
Okay. Yeah, just one of those. I think that's a common or an uncommon card.
Yeah. Yeah, it's common because I know it's played in Pauper. But in Pinata, you can't attack your opponents. You can only attack the Pinata.
So if you become the Monarch, you're pretty much good to be the Monarch forever.
Until the mono green player searches for Regal Behemoth and puts on the battlefield.
And oh, and then you the just become the Monarch because of that. Okay. But that is a cool interaction in Pinata because you're the only person who gets to ever draw an extra card at the end of turn.
That's correct.
It works with Planeswalkers as well. We did play a casual game with the group of us, and I played Joe to Planeswalkers. Let me say casual competitive. We played a casual competitive game with us. And Dak Vaden on turn 3 is pretty good.
That got out of hand very quickly.
So Pinata, we were very wrong in our prediction of our best way of winning in that. Just combo if you want to win in Pinata, I guess.
Yep. I almost won with Galta. I made a mistake, but had I not made that mistake, I would have won.
There was a gentleman sitting across from me who was going to play, or who was playing Krenko Goblins.
Oh, yeah.
And he passes the turn. We were playing against someone who was playing Karlov of the Ghost Council, who won, which was great. It was a fun deck.
Yep.
And the guy, as soon as he passes the turn, he goes, "Oh, no." We look over like, "What's wrong?" And he goes, "I had the win." And he had a sorcery speed, deal 6 damage. like Faded Conflagration or something. It was one like that type of spell. And he goes, just deal 6 damage. And but it was sorcery speed. And no, none of us were, I mean, I was playing blue, but I was tapped out. So right. And I don't run counter spells in that deck. Mm-hmm. And he was playing against a mono white deck and then a white black deck. And I said, well, none of us would have done that. Unless you could have, I guess they could have in white maybe made the pinata gain life.
Sure.
And he goes, I had the win. Yeah, you don't think about casting a 6 burn 6.
Yeah, for the win.
For the win.
In Commander.
In Commander.
Yeah.
So I like Pinata. I will definitely play that at home.
Yeah.
It's a different way to play. It makes the game a little more interesting, especially when you're playing with the same group of people who have, let's say, 4 or 5 decks that they consistently play. It makes it play a little different.
Yeah. And think about some fun strategies maybe, because I know I at least heard about someone playing a Kenrith the Returned King to pump the Pinata's life up so that it was harder to kill. Once you pop, you just can't stop. I understand.
Is that Pringles?
I think so. But I'm using it in reference to what we in Midwest would call soda.
Like the Coke Zero Sugar I just opened. But we don't call it soda. We call it pop in the Midwest.
That's why I said once you pop, you just, that's what we refer to it.
Oh, that's what we call soda?
Yes. Man.
We both jumped on you, producer Ryan and I were like, it's pop. It's pop.
We finally talked about something that wasn't Magic the Gathering. Producer Ryan just jumps in. Although he did commit to us today that he's going to learn how to play the game.
He promised he's going to spend hundreds of dollars. No, I'm just kidding. But he is going to learn how to play.
Yes.
We'll have a video on it.
Teaching producer Ryan how to play Magic the Gathering.
That's going to be like 4 hours long. You'll have a good time.
And that's session one of your 10-part session.
Oh, that's how many sessions it will be. And otherwise, aside from that, we just played a bunch of on-demand games, got lots of tickets,
yep.
Which turned into a lot of awesome prizes. What did you end up going home with?
I decided there was an Overgrown Tomb, new art Overgrown Tomb from Ravnica. Was it from
Guilds,
Allegiance?
Or
was
Guilds
from,
of Ravnica?
It's from Guilds of Ravnica. They had that artwork on a playmat, and I decided to take that and then use the rest of my stuff for packs. And instead of going for a standard legal pack, I decided to go for Khans of Tarkir, and I got 15 packs. And I pulled mostly trash, but a couple good cards.
You'll see that soon. We recorded a lot of videos, so we will have a vlog video coming out in the next couple of weeks on that weekend. We have footage from between rounds, pack openings, gameplay, and showing off some of our decks and stuff. So we're going to be putting that together, and that should be out in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see that. We ended up going home with... so we got the Command Fest Soul Ring playmat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the Azorius, the guild deck boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Worst guild.
I hate blue white so much.
Blue white's great, but I'd rather not play like, I don't know, Boros.
Although you do like Feather.
Feather's cool. Commander, sure, but even in regular, I don't think I think I'd still play that one last.
Yeah, you might be right. I played it in draft in your cube.
The cube is good, though, with that.
Boros cube was yeah. Surprisingly fun.
So we got that. We got the playmat. And so at, I don't know. I know that the prizes were different between Command Fest Chicago and Command Fest Seattle. So I know that Pastime Games did a different prize structure than Channel Fireball.
Yep.
Ours was great, honestly. So you could turn in one ticket for one pack of a standard legal set, I think, except for one of them. And I can't remember. It was like Dominaria, I think, was 2 tickets. And then...
which isn't standard legal, but yes.
I guess not standard legal anymore, right. But that, I think that was still... I yep. think that was 2 tickets.
Yep.
But then you could get a pack of like Khans, Origins, Battle for Zendikar. A bunch of those were 2 tickets, yep. As well as Unstable.
Yep.
And then Modern Horizons was 3 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And they had some Master Sets
And they had
in
some Master
like
Sets and stuff as well.
6 or some 7. Something
yeah.
Like that.
So, but for signing up, you got... You got the Foil Soul Ring, and then you got 3 scheduled events and 3 on-demands. And so depending on the level of play, which we did a lot of the casual ones, you got 4 tickets.
Yep.
Well, at the end, when Nick and I put our tickets together, we had a lot, because I think we played mostly, I think actually all of them were played casual. So that's 4, 8, 12. When we combined those, that was 24 just for the on demand. And then we had the rest of the tickets that came with the sealed. We ended up having enough that we got a box of a standard set, mm-hmm. and then 18 additional packs of a standard set, plus the deck box and the playmat. I mean, we left with so much value because of that prize structure. I mean, maybe the packs, I mean, assuming that ticket to dollar ratio was about $4 then, right, is so what you can assume.
So I have the analytics for that. So the on-demand events were $10. You know, we got ours included in our package.
In our package, right.
Right. But if you just wanted to buy an on-demand event, it was $10. And if you played casual, they gave you all four of your ticks.
Sure. Which would give you four packs of cards. So that's like $10 really turned into like 16 then.
Yeah.
If you were buying from like a shop.
Sure.
Because assuming they sell them for four,
mm-hmm.
maybe just under $3.99 or whatever, $3.50 even. Yeah. So, I mean, you left with value and you got to play a game with people you didn't know. And hopefully you played against some decks that you hadn't played before.
And it was coordinated by someone else who was there, you know, getting paid to be there, and
they were super helpful, judge. Right?
Yeah. And so you're breaking even in an on-demand. And, you know, they also had the higher tiers of competitiveness you played in on-demand, the more risk that there was.
So I think if you played competitive, though, each person got two tickets.
And then winner took eight.
Eight additional.
Right.
So, I mean, if you won that, great.
Yeah.
I just played casual because it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun and then it was guaranteed.
But I heard that, so again, like I said, we found on Reddit there was a comparison between Command Fest Chicago and Command Fest Seattle prize structure, and it seemed way different.
Yes.
Obviously. And I am thrilled. I mean, I'm happy with what we had.
Right.
It's all been good. I mean, praising Command Fest Chicago.
Yep.
We had Inkling Customs was there, Tappy Toe Club. I mean, we had some representation as well.
Absolutely.
So I would say overall we had a great weekend.
Yeah, and there was I think four vendors there. I sold some cards. I got my Gilded Drake for my cast deck finally.
Nice.
Which was cool.
I got the Judge Promo Capture of the Jing Shao, so I got to get my final extra turn card that I didn't have.
Right.
So now I can take all the turns if it ever happens.
It'll happen.
You have to have a lot of money, a lot of mana. I guess both. You could argue that as well. It's an expensive deck only because I have been collecting all those cards for so long. But I got that, so it was exciting because I didn't want to spend $250 on the Portal version.
Yeah. Kept seeing that Portal version.
Everybody had it, which I was thrilled. So they did bring a lot of Commander staples, but one of the items that, so on Twitter, Gavin Verhey also said, let us know how you thought Command Fest went, whichever one you went to, tell us what your thoughts are, how we can improve in the future. And I responded and said it was a great weekend. I think it would have been nice if the vendors had brought more foils. There were foils, but they were all the top premium foils.
Yeah.
Maybe like a binder of commons and uncommons, because I want to find a bunch of those for my commander decks. I like to put the shiny cards in.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some more non-foil commander staples as well.
Yeah. I personally hate foils.
Right. You're the opposite.
Right. So I was very happy with the number of foils that they had. But had they had both selections, then we'd both be happy about
yes.
that.
Yes. And I think the one thing that we heard some other people saying was it would have been nice if they had a binder of just legendary creatures.
Like I think
maybe had prepared with that so that you could just pick out cards that you can put directly into your commander deck as the commander.
Just imagine as a vendor, if you go, oh my gosh, look at this new legendary. I want to buy this commander. Hey, let me go on EDH Rec real quick and look up these 10 staples. Do you have these 10 staples as well that I can buy from you?
Right.
Wow. That would have been a fantastic idea.
Yeah. I think, well, it was new, obviously, right? So
I
think the next one, all these vendors, they've heard and they'll go, oh yeah, all right. Commander players are very prepared to drop some dollars to make the new deck that they want, even on site, you know?
Definitely. I was ready to.
I mean, I was about to buy all those unstable lands too. I didn't.
But then you turned around and went to your LGS and
I got a bunch of commander unstable lands just like yesterday because I had trade-in. So I did it. Okay, so prizes between the two. We found a Reddit thread. Again, don't know if this is 100% accurate. Obviously, we didn't attend.
Yeah, the Channel Fireball event in Seattle.
Correct.
So the Commander Fest Chicago 3-day pass was $120, where you got three on-demand entries and three scheduled events. On-demands were $10. which awarded 4 tickets per player, which a ticket is equal to a pack in this instance.
Sure.
And three...
A standard pack.
And the three scheduled events were $20 if you were to purchase them individually. And they were typically 2 rounds, except for Emperor, which awarded 4 packs per player per round. But now in Emperor, we only had 1 round.
But you got 5.
You got 5 for playing, and you got 3 for winning.
3 per person on your team. So it'd be correct. Like 9. The team would get 9 additional. So you get 8 you get per 8 person if you won.
If you won. 5 if you did not. So that would come out to be approximately, yeah. So yeah, you get 4 packs, your 8 packs for your scheduled event, 4 packs for your on-demands.
Assuming you play casual on-demands, I guess.
Yeah, on average, I guess this is what
okay.
I'm saying.
Okay, qualifier.
Yes, the Channel Fireball Command Fest Seattle event was $125, and included in that was 3 entries of the... of on-demand events and no scheduled events.
Okay.
Averaging 2.125 packs per player.
Oh, wow. That's a lot different.
It's way different. So, obviously some people who went to Command Fest Seattle were a little bit upset at the weight differences.
Sure.
Which totally can understand, but you also did, everyone did receive their foil soul ring.
Yep.
Which, you know, more than made up the value.
Sure.
Currently, as long as it holds value.
And it's a soul ring. We assume it will.
It probably will. So, yeah. So a lot of people are kind of upset just at how different it was. Like you said, you walked away with prizes of an entire booster box.
A sealed booster box.
And some
I had no idea that I was going to walk away with, honestly, anything more than like a deck box and a playmat. Mm-hmm. I did not anticipate on prizes being that great.
Right.
I was thrilled. I also like what's in standard right now.
Sure.
So I got I got a box of a Ravnica Allegiance, mm-hmm. and I got 18 packs of a Ravnica Allegiance.
Right.
Got to get that Hydrate Crisis for the cube.
And people from the Channel Fireball event are walking away with 7 packs.
But they still got the foil soul ring.
Still got the
foil soul ring. But it was very different. So obviously, I think the 2 different vendors that hosted this, the 2 different, you know, Pastimes versus Channel Fireball, there mm-hmm. was maybe some differences in the way that they set it up. But there might have been different costs. And definitely. That's the other thing to keep in mind is there might have been the venue could have cost more for Channel Fireball. Mm-hmm. You know, I know nothing about it, obviously.
No, I don't even know where it was held in Seattle.
It was in Seattle.
Yeah.
That's as much as we know.
Same.
Halfway around the world is what it feels like to mm-hmm, us mm-hmm. out here in Michigan. But... from what you can see online, that seemed to be the only one, like some of the only complaints was that they just felt that the events were very different and the amount of representation between the 2 events, as far as Wizards of the Coast representatives or the Commander Advisory Group or the Rules Committee versus cosplayers, were definitely weighted differently. There were far more in Seattle than there were in Chicago.
Which makes sense because that's where most of those people
right.
are.
That was not enough for me to say, though, that I didn't have a good weekend.
Oh, it was fantastic.
It was a lot of fun. It was cold, though. It snowed. We had snow.
You like the cold.
I know, but it was really cold. And we did not stay actually at the hotel. We stayed directly across the street from it. And so we got up every morning and walked over there. So I had to carry a coat around all day, but...
I stayed at the hotel because I'm a loner.
Got to use those Marriott points. That's why I did it.
I don't have Marriott points. I have just
a travel for work, so I had some points I could use, and I said, "Well, this is free for me to stay 5 whole seconds away from the hotel with the worst crossing light ever."
Well, the first day it didn't even turn.
No, there was no walk sign, so you had to cross what was seriously 6 lanes.
It was that particular
the worst
intersection
I've ever seen in my life. And it was directly across from a mall that I did go to every morning to get Starbucks.
Yes, instead of me spending $5 at the generic coffee place in the hotel itself.
I mean,
which was also
I think I spent less than that on actual Starbucks across the street. If you spent $5 on just a regular cup of coffee, I think I spent $4.50 on an iced caramel macchiato.
Black coffee is superior.
But more expensive, I guess.
Apparently.
It's just water with that grounds.
And bean juice.
Costs way more than all the stuff that I put in mine. All the sugar and the caramel. frozen ice.
Frozen.
I was gonna say frozen water, but then I said ice, which is the definition of
frozen water.
We got frozen ice,
which is one of the only solids that expands when becoming a solid.
And that was your science lesson for today.
If you want to know more details about that, you can tweet at me.
So we had fun with that. And then we played with a lot of people that we did not know.
Yeah, it was really cool to see all the different decks and you know, meeting some people that have been following the podcast and other people that haven't. We got to, I know one of the decks that I had the pleasure of playing against in one of my pinata events, was an all voting deck led by, is his name Dakin Blackblade?
Yeah.
The original owner of the Blackblade. It was cool that every time it was his turn, it was like, all right, are we going to vote to wipe the board or bring all the creatures back from the graveyards? And the next time it was like, all right, vote for one permanent and it gets exiled. I'm like, okay, this is cool that the whole board gets to decide what's the biggest threat on the board right now. It made the game very interactive, which I thought was a lot of fun.
Right. And so, playing with a lot of new people leads us into our main topic this week of, how to basically approach the social aspect of MTG when you're playing with a lot of people that you don't know.
Right.
Or I guess even people you do know. Yeah. And how you kind of approach a game, because there was a lot of discussion as we went into those games of is your deck really strong? I think that was the first question that most people asked. Yeah. Either I asked or someone else asked, and they said, are we playing for fun? Are we not playing for fun? And you know, they were prepared with like three different decks. It was like, okay, if you say you're going to play really, really strong decks, I'm going to pull this one out.
Right.
You know? So that was something that I think the community just does now. Whether you're at your LGS or you're in public, that's like one of the main questions.
Yeah, and please do this. Please ask this question. And go even a little bit further than that, because as you know, as you may or may not know, I guess, the second favorite thing that Andy likes to do in Magic the Gathering is make tokens. First thing, draw cards. Second thing, make tokens.
Making tokens is great.
So when I pull out my Scorpion God deck that puts -1/-1 counter on every single creature on the board every single turn, maybe I shouldn't play that against this token deck because it just hard stomps. Even if it's not, even if you can say the power levels are similar, but it's a direct counter.
Right. Yep. So we did a lot of that. If you see someone else pulling out a Massacre Girl deck that just wipes the board and you are preparing to play a token deck, just tell them, oh, you know, I was going to play this. I'm not changing my deck to combat you. I'm changing it so that I can actually play the game. It has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. Or it's just that if you play that deck, I know I really just can't play the game.
Yep.
And that's totally fair. I would not hold that against anybody if I was playing a board wipe deck and they said, well, I'm playing an all creature deck, so I know I have no way to win if you just keep wiping the board and I don't have counter spells or indestructible,
mm-hmm.
you know, abilities or keywords on anything. That's fine.
No.
Change it up. Or I can change mine. If you want to play a creature strategy and you just would prefer that I play a deck that isn't just 12 board wipes or bounces, that's fine. I can put away this deck. I've got plenty of other options. The point is to have fun.
That's right. Now, if that does happen and you brought three decks and it's a casual deck, casual competitive and competitive deck, do not spite bring out your competitive deck just to stomp that player that put out a deck just that counters yours. You can tell them, listen, I brought three decks and I'm not going to play this deck that just loses to yours. So I can either bring out my casual or my competitive.
Sure. That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, and I can't play this one because I won't have fun and want all of us to have fun.
Right.
But make sure you don't just bring out Consultation Kess and win on turn three and make sure people don't have fun.
Or bring out Consultation Kess and not win even on like turn seven.
It hurts. It hurts.
So after that, the other thing is you need to gauge your competitiveness. So when someone asks, and we saw this a lot throughout the weekend,
yes.
We saw a lot of discussion on this. There was a ton of discussion on Twitter, like we mentioned, about how competitive your deck was. There were a lot of people that were playing extremely competitive decks that were arguing that they weren't because they didn't have the full power in the deck. Like, well, I don't have the Lion's Eye Diamond, so my deck is not that good. It's like, well, Lion's Eye Diamond is really just like the cherry. It's not even needed. Nope. No deck needs a Lion's Eye Diamond. If you're playing a tier one CEDH deck, sure. But if you're doing that, no deck needs a Lion's Eye Diamond to sit at a casual table.
That's 100% true.
And I don't think that a Lion's Eye Diamond is needed at casual competitive either.
100% true.
Okay. So we do know that there were some cases where someone had argued that their deck was not competitive and stomped the group that they were playing with.
That was a casual on demand.
On demand. And a judge actually, you know, had to address it. And we know this firsthand because we saw it happen.
Yep.
And folks were given back their on-demand ticket because it was the game was over on like turn three.
Mm-hmm.
That's very obviously they were very upset. They went to a judge and said, "What the heck?
Yeah.
I thought we were playing a fun game and the game's over. We played for like a whole like 10 minutes, not
right.
even."
Right.
So I think from a social aspect, you also need to be honest. If you want to win, just say, I want to play a more competitive game because I want to try to win. That's right. What those decks were made to do.
Yep.
But if everyone else wants to have fun, try to have fun with them or just go find a different group if you can.
Yeah.
A lot of LGSs, there's more than, I'll say it, many, mm-hmm. or at least ours. We might be fortunate to have, I think we have like 7 shops around us.
Yeah, that's true.
Within an hour or so.
That's very true.
We're very lucky. You can just play with a different group of people
yep.
if you want to play more competitive.
Yep.
I think the next thing is, and like we mentioned, if there's a strategy that you want to avoid or that you don't like playing, you can also ask that. If you're saying, do you plan on playing a control deck that's going to lock out the game? You know, I prefer not to play that.
Right.
Just play with a different group of people.
Right. Or if someone's playing a combo deck and you're running your, I don't have any interaction deck, then okay, maybe you want to switch it up a little bit and be like, well, I don't want you to just win as soon as you have the combo assembled. You know, I want you to work for it, because that's what makes a game fun, is not just turn 5 same thing. I know you've talked about it with me before. Urborg Cabal Coffers, Torment of Hailfire.
That used to be his go-to. To be fair, he played Mono Black, Sidisi Undead Vizier, and it was
2 to the piece, 2 to the piece, 2 to the piece,
and try then, to win. And then win for like torment for like 28.
Yep.
I was like, okay, this, can you change it a little?
And
then he took that deck apart.
It's apart.
And I haven't lost a Torment of Hailfire in like a year and a half.
It's true.
You just gotta tell your group, we don't do that anymore because it's no longer fun. It was cool right. The first time.
Yep.
Maybe the second time, the third time it was old, mm-hmm. and now it's just I'm done with it.
Right. And now I do that in Shire against people that have not played against that before. And it's really nice to have the variety of decks that I have, because it's okay. In at least one of the shops that we play at, we'll play 2 pods with the same group of 4 people. And I always play 2 different decks.
Yeah.
I'll play something a little bit more competitive the first time and go, I'm dialing down the power in the second game hardcore.
Dialing it back on the Bears.
You need to build that Ayula deck.
I have it. It's literally a stack of probably 40 cards. I got all the Bears. I got Forest Bear, the bear that's got his arms in the air going, woo! I picked that up when it was cheap. Now it's like $40. I did not realize that shot up after that. I mean, Ayula. Obviously it's from Portal, so. But I never ended up putting that deck together. I should have done that before this weekend. I heard about some Ayula decks around, though. I didn't mm-hmm. get to play against one when mm-hmm. we were there this weekend.
I gave you like 8 of my foil bear tokens for that deck too.
No, they're all together. I think one of the things stopping me from building it though is that I don't have all the same artwork of the same forest, and I won't play a deck if they don't all have the same artwork, unlike you.
I trigger people so hard with my Galta deck.
Who hurt me when we were playing and he's like, all right, 7th land drop, this different forest. I was like, oh my gosh.
So I have
oh no.
I have 5 different arts for my full art forests, and then like 2 or 3 random, just like Kaladesh basics stuck in there.
It's the worst.
Oh, I love it.
We digress though.
Yes, we do.
And then I think one of the other items we want to talk about is when you're playing from a social aspect is politics in Commander with folks that you don't know. So I feel that when you're playing with a bunch of people you don't know, you play a lot friendlier, or at least I did.
Sure.
I don't think we played with one person who wasn't so friendly. Like everybody we met this weekend was so nice.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, whether or not they played a super competitive deck that wasn't in the right, in our opinion, in the right competitiveness mm-hmm. like category. Mm-hmm. Everybody was at least super nice. And so I think the politics wise, mm-hmm. everybody was like, you know what? You haven't been hit, so I'm gonna hit you this time.
Yep.
But you over here, remember that I didn't smack you this time because that's I right. would appreciate your help in the future because I'm probably not going to be able to deal with this third person over here who's playing a color that I can't deal with.
That's or right.
they're playing enchantments and I have no enchantment removal. So if you could, help me over here. And I think it worked out that way a lot this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to do that.
We played against Vivictus's Mahdi deck, which was great.
Really cool.
That game was super fun.
Yes.
And, I mean, he could have definitely won.
We did have to scoop early to come back, and I wasn't going to play my evacuation because we were going to scoop and go, and then I made a deal with him, and he said, if you can make it so that I can survive one more turn, I won't kill you right now, and I'm like, okay, I'll play the evacuation.
Right, so shout out to, on Twitter, it's Wazupki, played Vivictus as Mahdi, really fun. We did like you said, we had to cut the game short, but he did not take you out with commander damage when he could have.
That's correct.
He didn't take me out.
That's correct.
But he did take Nick out.
He killed Nick.
But we were about he was about to because he had the what's the enchantment to pay 5, untap and get another combat?
Aggressive assault.
Aggravated assault. Yeah. So that was out. But I was able to Teferi's protection. But mm-hmm. It was happening regardless.
Yep.
I would have been dead. You would have been dead.
Yep.
But we had to take off to go home. But we had a lot of fun. So I think that was one of the better games that I played.
I agree.
I played against 2 Karlov of the Ghost Council decks this weekend. I did not expect to play against that at all.
Man,
I hadn't seen that deck in like years because mm-hmm. it was. You know, a lot of those face commanders, I think, just get played a lot and then they're kind of shelved for a while.
That's true.
So it was nice to see those come back out. What was the most interesting commander deck that you played against this weekend that you don't see?
Well, I mentioned the deck in Black Blade.
With Black Blade Reforged.
Deck. Yeah, he did have Black Blade Reforged in there. And then a lot of voting cards in there, which was, again, I think super cool for the social aspect because everyone gets to make the decision of what happens when those cards go off. But other than that, I don't know. I saw a lot of normal decks, like in our Emperor game, there was Xenagos, and Gishath. There was, a Kenrith, the Return King, mm-hmm. Group Hug deck, mm-hmm. which was kind of cool. Didn't get to see all of that deck, but it was cool while it lasted.
I think the other one that I played against that I liked a lot was Mono White Angels, and it was Lyra Dawnbringer.
Ooh.
Flying, first strike, lifelink. Other angels get +1/+1 and lifelink. So I played against that in Pinata.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool.
It must be hard to block.
Angels?
The flyers, yeah.
We got stomped by Karlov. It was too fast. It was too fast. Turn 2, and then they were just gaining too much life. And I was like, we cannot deal with this. And I didn't have any blockers because I was playing Planeswalkers, mm-hmm. thinking I was getting tricksy there. I was like, I'm going to play these Planeswalkers. No one can attack them. And I'm just, no, big mistake.
Yeah.
It was too slow. So I think those were the two most interesting decks that I played against this weekend.
I wanted to talk to you guys, the viewers, and ask you, what commander deck should I build next?
Someone from Ravnica.
Let me think about the 3 that I have in mind, and none of them are from Ravnica.
Okay.
So I used to have a Morophon Eldrazi deck, and Andy hates Eldrazi, so I took that deck apart. And I built Mono Red Ilharg.
Seems like I hate a lot of stuff.
I hate your Azorius decks.
That's
you
true.
Hate my Eldrazi deck.
All right, that's fair.
And
Torment of
Fel. And my Reanimator decks. Yeah, that's true. So I had taken that apart to build Mono Red Ilharg for Mono Red October for an event that we have at one of our game shops. So I want to remake the Morophon deck eventually. So that's one of the suggestions is Morophon Everything Tribal, where I blink Morophon and have it come back in as whatever creature I'm currently holding in my hand that I can basically cast for free, like a Chromanticore. So it comes in as like an avatar or something like that.
Okay.
I have that. I have Rafik of the Many,
That's Exalted, right?
That's Exalted. Okay. It would be an Exalted Voltron.
Okay.
I used to have my SRAM deck, which I also took apart because it was just a little bit too powerful. So I wanted to build something a little bit more casual. However, Rafik does have a couple combos that kind of just win.
Okay.
And then my other one is my jank deck idea of Surveil Xur the Enchanter.
We looked this up on the drive home. There are 29 Surveil cards. Nope, there's 30.
30 Surveil cards. And I would have to put every single one of them into Xur.
And I think we're counting the white card that is Consulant Surveillance, just because it has the word surveil in it and it has nothing to do with surveil.
It's a white enchantment. It's fantastic. The idea for that deck would be to get out Enhanced Surveillance with Xur's first attack trigger and then surveil and then do something. I don't know what the end game is. Maybe you can give me a suggestion on the end game there too. Let me know which deck I should build next.
Yes. You can tweet at him at
Squeaky Pig M. It still says just M.
M.
M. It's supposed to be MTG.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. We'll look out to see if anybody has any suggestions on WinCons as well. If you are voting for Xur, we'll actually set up a poll for
sure.
It
yes.
Tonight. So, like always, we want to thank you for listening. If you want to contact us, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Guardian Pod. You can find me at AT Flory.
And me at Squeaky Pig M.
Also, take a look for hashtag Guardian Project Pod to find our posts and episodes. We like to hear from you, so send along your comments and any topics you'd like us to talk about, and we'll go over those in the next episode. You can also email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. I think that's it. That's a wrap.
That is a chicken Caesar wrap.
Wrap. But is there salad in that chicken Caesar's salad wrap?
We can put some lettuce and some...
Gotta be a little healthy.
Oh, let's throw some croutons in there and not be healthy.
Croutons, extra parm.
Sure, I'm down for extra
parm. But I want extra Caesar dressing to dip my sandwich.
You're going to dip your wrap in Caesar dressing?
Well, otherwise it's just in it. Yeah, I mean, you dip pizza in ranch, otherwise you're a monster.
What's the difference between house salad and Caesar salad?
House is usually like...
How many times you stab it?
Oh, Caesar. Just stab Caesar. Oh, another Mean Girls reference. Oh. Yeah.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye.
We didn't think this week was going to work, but next week we have a ton.
Why didn't you think this week would work?
Because
we came in with two topics.